From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. As you may know, the House of Representatives, while the premises was not going to be vacant on Halloween, will likely be haunted by the past 3 weeks and the continued potential for dangerous political brinkmanship. After a number of aborted attempts to elect a successor to deposed Representative Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House, first by Steve Scalise of Louisiana, second by Jim Jordan of Ohio, and third by Tom Emmer of Minnesota, the House finally settled on Mike Johnson of Louisiana as Speaker. For the postal community, it's noteworthy that Representative Johnson voted against the Postal Reform Act of 2022. Now permit me to introduce my guest on this episode of Naps Chat. A few weeks ago, Mark Acton retired from the Postal Regulatory Commission after over two decades of service on the regulatory agency. 4 years as a special assistant to Postal Rate Commission Chairman George Omas, and then as a presidentially nominated and Senate-confirmed commissioner in his own right on the Postal Rate Commission first, and a successor, the Postal Regulatory Commission. I have known Mark for most of that time, if not all that time, and count him among my friends. Mark has had a distinguished career in politics prior to joining the Postal Rate Commission staff, having served in numerous capacities on the staff of the Republican National Committee, including managing its direct mail operations. Mark was first nominated by President George W. Bush in 2005 and subsequently renominated by President Bush and later by President Barack Obama. Mark has seen a lot from his catbird seat overseeing the postal operations and finances over the past 20 years. Today, we like to reflect on his observations and reflections. Welcome to Naps Chat, Mark.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be back with you and your listeners.
Mark, allow me to make an observation, and I'd like you to share your thoughts about it. You cut your teeth in partisan politics, probably with one of the two most inherently political operations, namely the National Republican Party, and then you served for 20 years on one of the least partisan regulatory entities with commissioners who identify as partisans. Presently, two are identified as Democrats, two as Republican, and one as an independent. Mark, does partisanship play any role in how the Postal Regulatory Commission approaches its deliberations and its work? If not, how do you separate politics from policy?
Yeah, that is a question that I get often, Bob, regarding the work of the commission. You know, the commissioners are political appointees. They are political creatures. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are taking partisan approaches toward public policy making. In fact, I can tell you that when the commissioners come to the table, the first goal has almost always been to reach some unanimous consensus finding. And usually that is the outcome. The matters that come before the commission are not particularly partisan driven in most instances, but the viewpoints of the commissioners are colored by our individual experiences. And, you know, I don't think that Congress intended for there to be a sort of one voice at the table, or it wouldn't have created the commission the way it did with five leaders, five commissioners, five viewpoints, five opinions, five decisions. So we try to reach consensus, and most times we did. But there were times when there were dissents, and we appreciated that. We issued the orders, our opinions, and we moved forward.
What's interesting also to note is the five commissioners come from varied backgrounds geographically as well as politically. I know for in the past there were some commissioners that came from very, very rural areas, and some have come from urban areas. Does that in any way impact deliberations?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, the facts of the docket are what determines the outcomes of the individual cases, but the decision-making of the individual commissioners is colored by our backgrounds and experiences. And the commission has been blessed in the sense that we often have had a very varied composition of the panel. Commissioner Poling, for instance, comes from a history of work on the Hill, where she was assisting senators who had largely rural constituents, so that gave her some insights into the import in rural and remote America of the United States Postal Service. Ruth Godway came to the commission with a background in consumer advocacy, and she applied that well and often at the commission. Chairman Commissioner Taub came to the commission with a rich background of experience as the chief of staff for former Congressman McHugh and had an important role in what happened legislatively for the Postal Service. So all of those developments and backgrounds, I think, play an input into the decision-making of the commission.
You made a transition, as I said, from the National Republican Committee to the Postal Rate Commission. And I'm just curious, how were you recruited, first as a staff member and then as a commissioner? How did you end up where you are?
Well, as you noted, when George Bush became president in 2000, he designated Commissioner George Omas, the late Commissioner George Omas, as chairman of the Postal Rate Commission. George and I were old friends from his time working on the Hill in the House Oversight Committee on Postal Matters. And he called me and said, I've been designated chairman of the commission and I need help administering the operations of the agency. Will you come and be my special assistant chief of staff? That was in, I joined them in the spring of 2002. And I served for 4 years on staff as his special assistant before I was appointed by President Bush in 2006.
Before you joined, George made the phone call. He said, Mark, come on, I need some help on there. And then President Bush nominated you as a commissioner subsequently. Mm-hmm. What were your expectations when you went over to the Rate Commission?
Yeah.
And in retrospect, did you get what you expected?
That's I think that's the first time anyone's asked me that question, Bob. And I'll tell you, it makes me contemplate my good fortune in terms of what I was seeking and what I got. After 8 years of the Clinton administration, when there was a change of control in the White House, there was a vast level of opportunity for Republican operatives here in Washington to be assigned and appointed to these different roles. I didn't want to be in a vast agency with was overly bureaucratic. You had to do 12 memos to change the punctuation in another memo. I wanted one where there was a nimble operation, and just or more importantly, I wanted one with an important mission. And I don't think there are many more important public service missions than the delivery of the U.S. mail. So I was not disappointed in any sense. One of the great things about the commission is we can make a decision that morning about what we're going to do and be doing it that afternoon. The commission was an incredibly nimble management operation, and I really did appreciate that. You know, I wouldn't have stayed for more than two decades if I wasn't happy there. I often will say, if you have to work for a living, and most of us do, the commission is a great place to do it.
It has a number of notables have passed through the Rate Commission, the Regulatory Commission, including my old friend Dan Blair, who went on to the National Academy of Public Administration, and the presidential transition. Being the think tank for presidential transition. So in a sense, even though it is a small agency, the skill set that one brings to the commission as one as the skill set one takes away from the commission provides extraordinary excellence and exemplary excellence in going forth.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Chairman Blair. Chairman Blair deserves an enormous level of credit for his work in standing up a new rate-making system in the wake of reform in 2006. He was the first chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission. He accomplished what was required by statute in record time, in less than the time that was allocated in the law. So he was a great chairman and a good friend.
Interestingly, not only was he the first chairman of the Postal Regulatory Commission. He was the last chairman of the Postal Rate Commission.
That's right. Yeah, that transition was an interesting one, and it happened rather quickly. And I can tell you, having served as both a rate commissioner and a regulatory commissioner, they're very different jobs. I mean, sure, the mission of the commission was sort of uniform, but the way that we went about it as directed by statute and regulations changed dramatically.
Yeah, that provides me a great segue to the next question now. As you've recognized, the Postal Regulatory Commission, or the PRC, has undergone substantial changes since it was first created back in the Postal Reform Act back in 1970. 2006 Postal Accountability Enhancement Act really provided some more authority, more robust authority in regulating the Postal Service. Could you talk about how the role of the commission changed as a result of the 2006 legislation, and maybe changed even a little more as a result of the 2022 legislation?
Yeah, there were degrees of changes at those moments. It was a dramatic change between the Rate Commission and the Regulatory Commission. The Rate Commission had an important role, but the whole nature of the job was different. We litigated cost of service cases. So every few years, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, the Postal Service would bring to the regulator this proposal to adjust their rates, and the attorneys representing the different interests, the commercial mailers, the Postal Service, the regulator, everyone else who had a say in this, basically we held a little trial, and how that pie was divvied up in terms of who was responsible for paying what part of the cost that the Postal Service was proposing was what the commission decided. And in between rate cases, we would have the occasional appeal of a closing of a post office, or a complaint might come across our desk, that sort of thing. But with the Regulatory Commission's implementation, we had a regular series of reports that needed to be issued, like the annual compliance determination, the value of the USO, a whole host of other sort of regular duties that came about on an annual basis. So we were in continual production mode, and the commission has been that way since reform of 2006. And it was, as you pointed out, heightened in terms of additional duties and responsibilities with the Postal Service Reform Act.
One of the criticisms recently made by the Postmaster General has been the PRC issues report after report, analysis after analysis, but really nothing, you know, what is the impact of those reports, those analyses? I know your direct audience is probably the Postal Service itself, and as a venue for extraordinary transparency of postal operations and finances. But what happens with these reports, the annual compliance determination, public inquiries, and so forth?
Well, let me just begin my response by saying that I have great respect for Louis DeJoy. I think without him, we would never have had the level of bipartisan support we had for needed reform. He was a great leader in that sense. And the other aspect of Louis's leadership, which I appreciate, is he is an agent of change. Whether you agree with him or disagree with him, something new needed to be done, and Louis brought that to the table. In terms of how he interprets the commission's role and our contributions, no one likes to be regulated. It's the nature of the beast. And there should be a healthy level of tension between the operator and the regulator. If they're all getting along 100% all the time, something's not being done properly, in my view. So I appreciate his concerns, and I suppose you could characterize them as criticisms of some of the commission's reports and other work. But the fact of the matter is, what the commission does is outlined by statute and regulation. We don't craft this out of what we think would be interesting or of use to this person or that person. We do it because it's demanded by statute.
I would just underscore that by saying that one of the first conversations I had at one of our legislative conferences was with the former chairman, Dan Blair, and he uses the term healthy tension as being the relationship between the Postal Service and the Postal Regulatory Commission, and that was repeated by former chairman Robert Taub.
Yes.
Also, that there's that consistency, that the healthy tension is good. It's not to be criticized.
I think it's good as long as it remains healthy. There are moments in my experience at the commission when the Postal Service and the commission were more at odds than they needed to be. And the more important the matter, the higher the level of tension. But more often than not, the commission, the operator, and the regulator in the Postal Service, I think, function in a productive and constructive fashion.
Let me come back to the reports that the PRC, in fact, drafts, writes, rulings that it makes, opinions that it renders. What happens with those documents once the PRC has concluded its work on those documents?
Well, not every activity and every action of the commission is equal in nature or expected to be equal. I mean, the Congress made it very clear in times it wants opinions and at times it wants decisions. So if the commission, if the Postal Service, for instance, is implementing some changes that have national implications on postal performance, delivery performance, or on other matters that warrant an advisory opinion, then the commission looks at what they're planning. We ask questions, we develop viewpoints, and we share them with the Postal Service management. They can implement them or not. That's up to them, and that's the way Congress wanted it. In other instances, the Postal Regulatory Commission is tasked with important decision-making that's binding in every sense. And, you know, the commission and the service don't always agree on the nature of that decision-making, and they often don't agree on the outcomes of that decision-making. The rate the review of the rate-setting system is probably the greatest case study in that sort of dynamic, because there was a lot of debate in the community about the level of empowerment that the statute gave the commission to make decisions in how that rate-making system should be revised or not. It was always the commission's viewpoint that we had utter say over that, with practically no restrictions. And there were other viewpoints that thought less than that. They thought we might make minor changes in what was a inflation and price cap arrangement. So it depends upon which product you're pointing to of the commission and how individuals should perceive it. Some are decisional and some are opinions.
Do you find that the commission's reports, findings, analyses are listened to? Do they have an impact?
I think they're read. I don't know that, I certainly know that not all of our recommendations are implemented. Some of them may be. In some instances, I feel like the Postal Service is planning on making some changes, and law requires them to ask the Postal Regulatory Commission for our opinions about what they're doing. Whether or not they implement a lot of what we offer is sort of behind the scenes work that I don't necessarily have experience in knowing one way or another. But I know that they do read them with interest, and that they do comment to us occasionally about how they feel about this or that. Sometimes they think it's a good idea, and sometimes they don't.
More recently, there's been a lot of examination of postal performance. I know right on the front page of the PRC website is a link, a much easier link to navigate than the Postal Service's website, to their new performance dashboard. Does the commission pay attention to the performance?
Yes. You know, you have to remember, Bob, and I know you know, the words accountability and transparency are in the two-sentence mission statement of the commission. An important part of that sharing of information is knowing how delivery standards are being met or not. And people sometimes sort of dismiss the data sharing aspect of the commission's responsibilities as minor or unimportant, but you have to remember that before 2006, there really, in the creation of the Postal Regulatory Commission, there really wasn't a resource, a place to go for this sort of insight. So, you know, whether you're concerned about service performance or you're concerned about fiscal performance, without the work of the commission to collect, to compile, to analyze, and to share this information, we wouldn't really have good insights on what was happening one way or another, good or bad, with the Postal Service.
One of the champions of postal performance data comes from your home state, Kentucky, and that's Chairman Comer of Kentucky. His provision in the Postal Accountability Act of 2022, which actually made available a public-facing performance portal. Mm-hmm. Is it something in the water or the coal in Kentucky on postal?
Well, you know, you're right. The congressman has been a great champion of that cause. And, you know, I don't know how anyone makes a cogent argument for saying that more information is not good. And it takes a lot of responsibility. It takes a lot of resources to do, and the commission's committed toward that. But without that sort of information being shared on a regular basis in an informed fashion, it's hard to make good judgments moving forward.
You know, it's been said within the U.S. government, people who look at government, sunlight is the greatest sanitizer, that it makes things more credible, transparency and accountability, and the Postal Regulatory Commission has had a tremendous role in ensuring that transparency. Can we view the Postal Regulatory Commission not only as the regulator, but a clearinghouse of this type of postal data?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not a one or the other choice, right, Bob?
Yeah.
Those are not mutually exclusive goals, and I think the commission fulfills both of those roles with great admiration. as I said earlier, the sharing of that data is an enormously complex endeavor that the commission is engaged in on a regular and daily basis. So I think without the commission, we'd be a lot less informed about what's happening, good or bad, with the Postal Service.
With those two issues, transparency and accountability sort of dovetail with one another, is regarding two of the most watched, I guess, items that are currently on that have been docketed by the PRC, namely the ongoing public inquiry in the Delivering for America plan and the limits of postal rate increases, which a lot of mailers are concerned about. Now that you're no longer a commissioner and you're probably freer to talk about these types of issues, could you share your insights as to how the PRC can incentivize postal performance, exemplary postal performance, and how we should view postage rate increases? Because, you know, and price elasticity. I mean, at what rate do postal rates independently cause a reduction in demand or the decrease in mail volume?
Yeah, well, those are the questions of the hour, and they will be more important questions moving forward because the Postal Regulatory Commission is obliged under its current arrangement to review the 10-year review of the rate-making system soon, I think in 2025. It's an enormous endeavor, and it requires a lot of resources to be committed early on to prepare for that, which I think the Postal Service, before I left the Postal Regulatory Commission, was already beginning preparations in that sense, and I'm sure they're on track to do more of that. This question about driving service performance is one that comes often before the commission and something the commissioners have talked about. We are, for instance, pursuing this notion of using rate authority to drive service performance. And that's an interesting concept that has been explored in foreign posts on a regular basis, but not so much in the United States. So, you know, we'll see how that develops moving forward. It can be helpful or it could be hurtful. It depends upon how it's engaged. In my view, I mean, I'm not privy to the docket at this point, but you want it to be a two-way street. It's a sort of, if you're going to head down that path of rate authority in exchange for service performance, it should be one where the Postal Service is awarded when they do well and perhaps don't get as much rate authority when they don't perform as well.
That's funny. You know, it's sort of funny because I remember a conversation I had with Chairman John McHugh years ago when the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act was being developed, was, do you view the Postal Service as this business operation when you look at incenting performance? Do you look at it as a public utility, which the regulator has a more active role in ensuring that the utility performs effectively, or is it a public service beyond the scope of what we would normally view as a regulated entity, that is a government regulator regulating another government agency? So this is all fits within that sort of structure, that discussion, I think.
Sure. I mean, the fact of the matter is the Postal Service is not one or the other. It operates both as a monopoly and in the competitive market field, and it's the regulator's job to play a role in both of those endeavors, and I think that the Commission does a good job of being responsible and responsive to those responsibilities.
Final question, Mark. Many outsiders, and that's even outsiders from the postal world, are impressed by how the Postal Regulatory Commission has worked together over the years. For the record, PRC activities have postal regulatory agency activities been collaborative, combative, or in between, and why?
Yeah, well, I mentioned earlier, I think, Bob, that the commissioners, in my experience, always come to the table looking for solutions. I mean, we want it to be as unanimous as it can be. Some of those discussions can be quite combative. The commissioners sort of hash that out amongst ourselves before we go public with our decision making. It's always a very respectful process, and I think a productive one, but it's never, you never go into those meetings, those decisional meetings, thinking that it's going to be a slam dunk, because it's conceivable that individual commissioners may have individual pursuits that they want better addressed than what the consensus is contemplating. But I think more times than not, certainly much more times than not, in my experience at the commission, the commissioners come together and getting a consensus approach. You don't always get all of what you think is important, but you get parts of it, and it's enough to make it work.
I just say, observe from the outside, it looks like you work pretty well together.
I think so. Even when we disagree, it's a very respectful environment.
If only that could occur on Capitol Hill. With that, I want to thank former Postal Regulatory Commissioner Mark Acton for joining this week on Naps Chat.
Thank you, Bob.
For those of you who are listening in very attentively, you might hear a lot of background noise. This podcast was recorded at a local coffee house in DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., not far from Mark's home. And I want to thank Naps Chat listeners for logging on today. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share Naps Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
And make